First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
This is WJCT News 89.9 in Jacksonville.
Opinions expressed on the Friday Media Roundtable are those of our panelists and do not necessarily reflect the views of WJCT News.
The City Council addresses incidents of anti-Semitism and hate speech. The March mayor's race starts to heat up. And go Jags! Excitement builds for this weekend's big playoff game. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We are live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, local artists on regular rotation. It's this month's DJ listening sessions inside our JME, the Jacksonville Music Experience. But first, it's Friday. And here to round up all the week's news, we're so pleased to welcome here in studio, Shelton Hull of Folio Weekly. Good morning.
Good morning.
City Council Member Randy DeFore. Good morning.
Morning.
A.G. Gankarski of our own Jax Today and Florida Politics.
Good morning and thanks for having me.
And Claire Heddles of Jax Today.
Hi, Melissa.
Good to see you all. And the number to call in, 549-2937. The show is also streaming live video right now on Facebook and YouTube. Well, let's begin with our top story. The City Council has dueling bills moving to address anti-Semitism and hate speech in the city. Less than a week after a towering image of a cross and a swastika was projected onto the CSX transportation building downtown, the council will have two emergency bills to review next Tuesday night to prevent more of this kind of thing happening in the city. Both bills say the same thing. The first, filed Monday by council member and mayoral candidate Leanna Cumber, makes projecting any message onto a building or structure illegal without the property owner's permission. If you do it anyway, you're liable to be arrested and get up to 60 days in jail, a $2,000 fine, and your equipment will be confiscated. But here's the thing. Another bill from City Council President Terrence Freeman proposes the same thing. Now, keep in mind, Cumber is running for mayor. Here's Leanna Cumber.
It would seem odd that my colleagues would vote down a bill that is so critical and important to the community and that is identical. And so I think that if that happens, it's pure politics.
Let us know your thoughts, folks. It's 549-2937. Council Member Randy DeFore, what's going on here?
I think, unfortunately, Leanna Cumber stated it correctly. This is political operatives in the background doing their work. It's so sad because the whole purpose of hate speech is to divide us, you know. So it would seem to me the best approach would have been that when one person filed their legislation that everyone would get on board. It's disappointing. That's the only way I know how to describe it.
Now, according to Action News, Council President Freeman's bill was assigned a lower ordinance number than Cumber's bill. Can you explain the maneuvering going on with all of that?
So, as you might guess, the president has a lot of leverage. So, I think what probably would happen is he went to legislative services and just demanded that his legislation get a lower number. But if you look at the legislation itself, at the bottom of that legislation, you'll see the general counsel basically did a timestamp, and it showed that Leanna Cumber's came in. Obviously, it was hers.
Okay, 549-2937, A.G. Gankarski. We've got a mayor's race in a couple of months, and the games have begun, it seems.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is part of what is called the silly season in politics, where you get this kind of gamesmanship, but you kind of wish one of these bill authors would have had a time machine, because the stuff that they're objecting to that happened at the CSX building also happened during the Florida-Georgia game. There was no legislation then. There was no move toward that. I mean, people issued statements of condemnation, but the reality was this was a live issue for months. It was anticipated this could happen again. You know, we've seen what's happened with the neo-Confederates and the Confederate revivalists, flying planes, broken windows at Mayor Curry's office, and so on. So, you know, when you look at these things, I mean, you've got the city council rushing to seem like they're acting, but in fact, what they're doing is, you know, they're acting a little bit too late. You know, and it does seem political. It does seem, you know, driven by partisan concerns, driven by the 2023 cycle. And, you know, Council President Freeman is likely going to win this one. And, you know, and the way it's going to be framed in the end is, why does Cumber want credit for filing first? I mean, that's the way it's going to be framed in the context of the mayoral race, which is already incredibly nasty. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, this feels like a lot of people rushing to be first when really they're 3 months behind the curve.
And Claire Heddles, of course, you know, the other day we had on the show the president of the Jewish Federation of Northeast Florida, Miriam Feast, and she championed the council taking action, but also showed solidarity with other groups around town, particularly those calling for the removal of Confederate monuments, LGBTQ individuals saying hate speech is hate speech. Let's speak with one voice in condemning it.
And I almost wish there actually were two different bills that had different ideas of how to address hate speech, because I think this particular bill that it's almost every council member has gotten behind, I haven't heard a lot of skepticism about whether it's going to be most enforced on hate speech or whether it's going to end up being weaponized on communities that are already the most policed. Is it going to end up being used against street artists or other kinds of, you know, projections or Christmas lights or something? Or is it actually going to be a solution to the hate speech? Are we going to see the hate speech evolve to a different form that's not projections, and then we have the same situation? So I would like to see more skepticism and debate as the council rushes this through as an emergency measure, or, you know, another bill that actually proposes another solution rather than two with the exact same solution.
And Shelton Hull, later in the hour, we'll talk about all of the Jaguars' excitement. But let's not forget, as AG said, these hate messages have a way of appearing during high-profile sporting events.
Yes.
And we've got another one coming up this weekend. Of course, it's an away game, but still, well, we may see this again this weekend.
Maybe so. And, you know, that sort of thing only seems to happen here. I find it interesting that the city would rather pass some sweeping legislation to block freedom of speech rather than crack down on this small little nugget of white nationalists that are doing these provocations. It's not so much about, you know, picking fights with the minority community or the Jewish community or the LGBT community. These people are openly calling out the mayor. They're calling out JSO. They're calling out the city council, and they're calling out Shad Khan and the Jaguars. They've been doing this several times now. No one's been arrested. No one seems to know who they are. You can fly an airplane with Confederate messages over the stadium, violate the airspace, and no one even knows who they are. And it's,
Well, we did find out who flew the plane. It was a Tampa company, actually. But go ahead.
Well, because as we know, the state of Florida is a hotbed for white nationalism, arguably more white nationalists and, you know, neo-Confederates in Florida per capita than any other state in America. And, you know, we tend to go soft on them. I remember Governor DeSantis used the term jabroni to refer to the guy flying the airplane overhead. And if you look it up on Urban Dictionary, a jabroni, that's a pro wrestling term for someone who is paid to lose a fake fight with a predetermined outcome. And maybe that's what this is. But what it comes down to is, if you can do that with laser projectors, you can do the same thing with a 50 caliber rifle. So I guarantee you there will be an escalation later this year.
You know, Council Member DeFore, the other day we had Rory Diamond, one of your colleagues on the show, talking about this legislation, and he said it would pass First Amendment muster. That's always been the response, you know,
right,
from police and public officials, that as odious and insightful as this speech is, it is protected under the First Amendment. What say you?
That is correct. That is kind of, that's the obstacle that we're up against. When you compare to the plane that did the Confederate flag, that, you know, that is First Amendmentally protected. This legislation is different because it's on private property. So this is the difference. So if you go onto someone's private property and you put up any type of the legislation is neutrally based, Claire, to your point, but if you put up any type of whatever, could be graffiti, to your point, then you are subject to this legislation and the penalties for it.
549-2937. Give us a call. It's our Friday roundtable with Councilmember Randy DeFore, A.G. Gankarski, and Claire Heddles of JAX Today, Shelton Hull of Folio Weekly, and you, 549-2937. May on the South Side. Hi, May. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Once again, goodness, you know, instead of having a noise ordinance for loud cars, we have a little bitty ordinance about music in the cars. This bill here just simply isn't strong enough. It needs to be like, you fly over the there should be no planes flying over to Jaguar Stadium, period. If you do that, it's like a $50,000 fine, period. You project this image on a building, you have strong penalties, you enforce them instead of giving this little whimsy lip service to a real problem that is mortifying for our city. This is why you're looked down on. That is all. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, May. AG, I believe you wrote a little bit about this, comparing Jacksonville's action, and we'll get the council members' response too, but comparing what's being done here to what's being done in some other cities.
Yeah, I mean, other cities, West Palm Beach had a similar provocation, and their police showed up and responded to it timely. What we saw here is a lot of hand-wringing from JSO in the first instance regarding, well, we can't do anything about it. Sort of like OJ looking for a real killer. They just abdicate responsibility. And, you know, the caller brought up a very good point. When the state's booming system ordinance, barring loud music from cars, went into effect in July, and this was a time when you had the appointed sheriff, because the previous sheriff had walked off the job because he decided to move to Nassau County. The appointed sheriff's JSO said, hey, we have the pretext now to enforce this ordinance. And we know what booming system ordinances are about. It's about, you know, marginalized communities. It's about Black people. It's about young people. It's about getting in people's cars. It's about affecting search and seizure. You know, fast forward to today with, you know, the anti-Nazi bill, you know, after, you know, a few months of basically take the skinheads bowling from city government, you've got this performative thing. We're going to enforce it now. The most interesting part of the legislation to me is the seizure of equipment that's possible. You could, you know, theoretically, if these people are arrested, you could seize the equipment. That's probably more important than a $2,000 fine. But, you know, marginalized communities get tied up in the maw of the criminal justice system every day in the city. Yet when it comes to people from the hard right, whether it's the neo-Nazis, whether it's the Confederate provocationists, or whether it's the people a few years back who did the same thing on the human rights ordinance expansion because they opposed LGBT rights, those people are treated with kid gloves like they're the 20th person on the city council. It's an abomination, and I would hope that the 2023 cycle addresses this in a more concrete way than previous cycles, which were basically mute on the sort of domestic terrorism.
Randy DeFore.
I can't speak to the JSO, but I would say this from a legal standpoint. I'll put my legal hat on. You have to be able to prove that whatever speech it is enough that it reaches the level that it could incite either a riot or some form of harm to the community. I mean, in those terms, it's usually considered physical harm.
Well, I can tell you this as again, Karski. We don't have big family reunions. You know why? Because the Nazis liquidated a lot of my family tree. So when I see a Nazi swastika projected on a building, I take that as a terroristic threat. The fact that city leaders can't do that or don't do that, it shows at the very least a limitation of vision.
Again, I cannot speak for the JSO, but I think what, you know, AG, the things
you voted for
raised,
every budget of the JSO.
The things that you raise are certainly items that we should be talking about. And I mean, I agree with you. I truly have a heart for making sure that we take care of the lesser of these. And so if we aren't doing it and if we aren't doing it right, then we've got to take that on.
And I appreciate the discussion right now with everyone listening out in the public as well. It's your chance to lend your voice. 549-2937. John in Jacksonville, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. I was just, you kind of addressed my question. I was curious why law enforcement hasn't figured out who this is, or if maybe someone is, claiming responsibility, or
yeah,
if they're
doing
it anonymously.
There are a couple of, well, there's several groups, honestly, John, and they have claimed responsibility. Thanks for that, Claire.
And TK Waters said this week during a press conference that he knows who's doing it and that they just don't have the tools to arrest, as in his support of the legislation.
They have Glocks.
So he says they do know. But I think AG makes a great point that has JSO developed a trust in the community that the community is going to believe that JSO is going to use this law to stop white nationalists and far-right hate speech? I think there's other things we could see from JSO to show their commitment.
Shelton.
I think that from the city council's hands are kind of tied. They have to do something about it to kind of make a statement about how they feel about it. And I'm sure many of them take it personally because they have to work in City Hall, too. I remember going to places like Einstein's back in the 90s, having to fight your way through a gauntlet of skinheads just to get in and out of the club at night. I live in Five Points. We had Proud Boys marching around in Five Points just a couple of months ago. We've seen a steady escalation. And, you know, maybe this time it's people flying planes overhead. Maybe they'll bring tiki torches. Maybe we'll have a Charlottesville type thing.
I think that's the concern people have, not to cut you off, but that at a certain point, someone's going to get hurt. I think that's the fear a lot of people might have right now.
Someone is absolutely going to get hurt. You know, and it might be someone we know. We've seen up and down the state. We had a governor, what was it, just a year or two, a couple years ago, you had men with swastika hats, swastika armbands, pulling people out of moving cars on camera and beating them up. And the governor said there's no way to really be sure that they're Nazis. And we've cultivated a reputation here in Northeast Florida and in the state of Florida historically, you know, going back to when you had white nationalists setting homeless people on fire back in 2006, 2007. We have a national reputation as the happy place for neo-Nazis. It's a place where neo-Nazis can do things like this, where drop little Klan recruitment flyers in people's yards and no one's done anything about them. And so their numbers have grown. They feel empowered. And, you know, I would love to see the city council pass this legislation and sign into law just to see how those guys immediately escalate. Maybe they'll project it onto City Hall. Maybe they'll, you know.
All right. Lots of feedback coming in from all over town. Dave tweets the show, law enforcement could seize their rental vehicles. Shannon emails the show, I am not anti-police, but I am tired of hearing JSO say there's nothing we can do. 549-2937, Joe in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Joe.
Good morning. I would look at it as it's not a Republican or a Democratic issue. It's a moral issue, and as long as you have authorities having jurisdiction indoctrinating your children, you're never going to have an open and free society, and that people need to pay attention to the microaggression that's being disseminated by all of the public media companies, and I would take my comments off the air.
Well, you know what? We're just trying to get the news out to the public about this, and we thank you for your call. Rick on the East Side. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi, I wanted to address the mayor's race and then also say a little something about the current topic. One is that as Don Davis, on the day and at the point they announced his candidacy at the chamber, he had a bit of a Freudian slip, I think, and made a statement very much to the effect of, I intend to govern for the benefit of the chamber, period. No elaboration, when I say the benefit of the chamber, I mean how the chamber benefits the city, nothing like that. Just stated, I intend to, it should be obvious, I think he said, that I intend to govern for the benefit of the chamber. I think people should know that. On the other issue of hate speech in this, we have to remember that Jacksonville was born in racism. We have the council structure and the geography in our county and our city that we have because Jacksonville didn't want black majority rule back in 1968. This is why we have the at-large members and everything else. So the idea that the JSO can do nothing, we need to remember two things. The JSO has an intelligence unit coordinating with Homeland Security like every police department in the nation. On top of that, we need to remember that for 10 to 15 years, the domestic terrorists, I call them, but white nationalists and so on, have been recruiting police officers and military veterans to the extent that they can. That, I think, should be looked into somewhat. But, you know, we now have a story of a GOP right-wing operative ensconced in the police department. I don't know what he has access to down there. The files of the people, which he was most interested in.
Yeah, you're talking about the late Kent Sturman, Rick, which we'll discuss in a minute. But Rick, you make a lot to unpack there from Rick, who's a very well-informed caller. Let's begin with the mayor's race. And he was referring to Daniel Davis, the CEO of the Jacksonville Chamber. Let's talk about that for a minute. The Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce has actually been named as a co-defendant, along with CEO Davis, in a lawsuit challenging his continued employment while he runs for mayor at the same time. In a statement released Thursday, the chair of the chamber called the lawsuit disrespectful. The lawsuit was filed by conservative activist Billy Tucker Volpe of the local Tea Party. It claims that the chamber has been weaponized in favor of its CEO, Daniel Davis, in the most competitive and really expensive local mayor's race in modern history. 549-2937. A.G. Gankarski, the lawsuit says Davis should not be allowed to run the chamber while he is seeking public office. It also points out Davis makes $536,000 a year, working 55 hours a week, and says that it's also unethical that he asked for a guarantee that he could retain his position as chamber CEO in the event of a loss this spring. Davis calls the lawsuit a cheap political stunt.
Yeah, and the presumption is that the plaintiff has standing because she is a chamber member. The chamber counters, well, she's only been a chamber member for 2 weeks now. But standing is standing. And, you know, the allegations in the suit are that there are symbiosis between the JaxBiz Political Committee, which is a validly nonpartisan, and Daniel Davis's Building a Better Economy Political Committee, which is definitely partisan. And, you know, Davis has been setting up this mayoral race for a long time. In 2015, he told me he's going to run in 2023. It was a known secret. He's been an active candidate since September. And people have been grousing even before he got in the race that, you know, he was basically double dipping by taking the chamber salary while, you know, running an active candidacy, because you can't do both at the same time. But, you know, this is the tip of the iceberg for what has been a nasty mayoral race, full of issues that are ancillary to the vast majority of people in the city. Leanna Cumber and Daniel Davis, they have the bulk of the fundraising, and we have seen a panoply of irrelevant crap, ranging from, you know, 2007 memos from Davis to an ad featuring Hussein Cumber, Leanna Cumber's husband, who is deeply connected not only in the city, but also in national Republican politics going back decades. You know, these issues are not what people are really thinking about. They're thinking about drainage. They're thinking about the murder rate. They're thinking about crime. They're thinking about rents they can't afford. They're thinking about a decline in the standard of living. And they're getting Hussein Cumber in ads. They're getting, like, these esoteric memos, and the only people who are really benefiting from this are the consultants. Tim Baker, Melissa Stone, they are getting vacation houses, new cars out of this, laughing their way to the bank, while we have the most irrelevant discussion. It makes the 2015 mayoral race look like the Oxford debates. And we thought, well, that was nasty at the time because they were bashing Alvin Brown. 2019, it was nasty in a different way. But Anna Broche basically didn't have much resources. We have two highly funded, serious Republican candidates, and what we are seeing in them is throwing mud pies at each other, spending millions of dollars to do that, and it is basically obscuring the political discourse. If you saw Chris Hands call him in a Jackson this week, he posed 20 questions that needed to be asked.
He'll be on next week, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And I urge you to listen to that. 20 questions ranging from, you know, what would your first budget look like? To how do we fulfill the broken promises of consolidation? We aren't hearing any of that. What we're hearing is high-dollar character assassination, that really doesn't benefit people. And if you're a Republican voter, you have to wonder if somebody like Al Ferraro, who is out of this because he doesn't have enough money, is basically running on the theme, I've got integrity. He's going to cut into these people's votes because Republicans may be dumb, but you know they all see what is happening here, and they see that character assassination is being used in place of real substance that actually affects people in 2023.
Ursula in San Marco, go ahead.
Hi. So one of the things that I want to discuss is the gaslighting. I think it's a gaslighting attempt by the Republican machine here with this whole you have to resign to run. Because what Daniel Davis does every day, and he gets paid, what, $535,000 a year to do, is to hobnob with the big names, big money in Jacksonville, and to make connections. And that is exactly what people do to win a political race. The difference is he's being paid $535,000 to do it. It does also benefit the chamber. But then how is that a problem for someone who's making, what, $45,000 for a current sitting councilman? They're taking away from their everyday livelihood to try to run. And I just feel like it seems as though this straw poll that they set up, Curry wanted to have a straw poll to citizens, seems like they just really want to try to highlight that difference. And it's just, it's crazy to me. And I wonder if the panel thinks, was this trumped up specifically for this mayoral race? Or is this a longstanding belief?
No, never.
I'll take the.
He's just concerned about good government.
Thank you, Ursula. Randy DeFore, and then we'll go to our other panelists.
Well, thank you, Ursula. You're right on the money. This is, again, political operatives behind the scene using the mayor's office to try to hurt other candidates in their campaigns. And just to follow up on what AG said, we have known that Daniel Davis has been promised this mayoral position for a very long time. He was given
promised it by the
establishment. And they put him in the chamber waiting his turn to be the next mayor. So going back to this whole negative, you know, the reason why they're doing the negative campaigns is because it works, right? So the only way this is going to change, is if people stop voting for people who use that type of campaign. That's the only way it's going to change.
And, you know, what is astounding to me, actually probably not that astounding after watching politics here for some years, Claire, is how much money is going to be spent on a local mayor's race. This is just the beginning. Now, as AG said, these candidates need to answer to the voters about their vision for the city. And we will invite all of them on. Some of them have already been on. We will invite all of them to appear on this program to answer questions at jackstoday.org about their vision for the city of Jacksonville, which is what this should be about.
I think that is the new precedent for local elections. The sheriff's race, you can look at, had millions and millions of dollars poured into it. That's what we're seeing again in this mayor's race. Millions of dollars and going toward the attack ads, going towards these conversations that really don't have anything to do with people's daily lives and how the mayor is going to impact their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, something else I want to talk about, getting into the politics of it. Daniel Davis and Leanna Cumber are the leading Republican candidates. They've both raised eye-popping amounts of money. On the Democratic side, Donna Deegan, who has the highest name recognition, of course, has raised the third highest amount. This goes to a runoff almost certainly in May after the first March election, Shelton. But, you know, to Randy DeFore's point, plans were put in motion many years ago to give Daniel Davis, the CEO of the chamber, a glide path into the fourth floor of City Hall. I think, honestly, what the Davis camp didn't account for was Leanna Cumber and her husband coming in with an enormous amount of money and juice of their own on the Republican side.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's be fair. Dan Davis has been great for the chamber. He's earned every penny. Sales of laser projection systems are through the roof.
Okay.
And, you know, they have to raise a lot of money for these elections, Cumber and Davis, because 99 out of 100 citizens couldn't pick them out of a lineup if they saw them. And it's kind of a race to the bottom. They can't talk about the serious issues because there's really not much they can do about it. No one's going to do anything about the rents. No one's going to do anything about the drainage. The murder rate is never, ever going down. And so what they have to do is just, you know, whoever's first.
And it's not like it couldn't. I mean, under the Jacksonville Journey, which has been defunded, the murder rate was starting to go down. Mm-hmm. You know,
That's true.
We're 15 years out from that. We're 15 years farther into decline of standard of living. We're 15 years farther into, you know, families being torn apart by the fact that people have to make choice between raising their kids and actually working these dead-end jobs to basically, you know, pay for some hedge funds like, you know, mortgage on an apartment complex. I mean, these are the things that are happening. So, you know, the Jacksonville Journey worked in its time, but we have different economic circumstances now. We have less home ownership here per capita than, you know, many other cities. And that's the trend that's only getting worse. And when people don't feel ownership investment, they turn to crime.
Yeah. We have two candidates who are conservative Republicans who are going around calling each other liberal. We're about a month away from one of them saying that the other is going to turn Jacksonville into San Francisco. And at the end of the day, 75% of the citizens of Jacksonville aren't going to vote no matter what. And ultimately, this mayor's race will come down to, there's really one question that matters, and that's who does Ron DeSantis want to be the next mayor? He picked our sheriff, and he'll probably pick the next mayor, too.
What do you think about that, Randy DeFore? Will we see a Ron DeSantis cut an ad for
not.
Daniel Davis, for example?
Really, I really hope not. Billy Tucker is part of the Tea Party,
who filed the lawsuit,
and you know they're very close to that whole group is very close to DeSantis, and I'm hopeful that that's enough to kind of peel him off of Daniel Davis.
You think he would stay neutral in this race?
That's what I hope. I hope that's going to happen, because he should. He should stay neutral in this race.
Ray emails the show. Both Cumber and Davis are tapping into race politics using ethnic names. Cumber using her Cuban heritage to garner Hispanic votes, and Davis using Cumber's husband's name, Hussein, in attack ads to scare voters like Republicans used to do with Barack Hussein Obama. Nothing new. This negative campaigning works in Jacksonville.
I think that's so interesting because I think that's spot on. And I think that I can't believe, have you ever seen a campaign where they bring up a spouse before? It's also so misogynistic.
The Clintons come to mind. That's the only thing. Yeah.
Usually they bring down the spouse.
Go ahead.
I just think it's interesting that Hussein is even on any type of commercial. I mean, it's misogynistic in my point of view.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whether it's that or whether, I mean, hearkening back to what you mentioned, A.G. Gankarski, when Alvin Brown was mayor and running for re-election, I remember very well mailers that went out all over town that intentionally darkened Mayor Brown's skin.
Oh, yeah.
That tried to associate him with higher rates of rape and murder in the city of Jacksonville. It was an incredibly racist campaign tactic, and it worked. And so it's not as though we haven't seen these kind of gutter tactics before in the city of Jacks. But, you know, we'll continue to take calls about this, and the number is 549-2937. But before we move on and talk about the Jaguars, let's touch on something a caller checked in on earlier in the hour. This is a Jacks Today investigation, digging into what was going on with the late donor Kent Sturman. He tragically died by suicide. He was close to the governor and local political leadership. And it turns out he had JSO access for nearly a decade as part of what was called the Sheriff's Circle. Claire Heddles, you've been writing about this at Jacks Today. This has been a story that has shocked the community. What did you find? What's new with this?
We've been working for months to get information about the level of Sturman's access to JSO. Starting last summer, we asked for logs of his access, and at that time, JSO told us that there were no logs, it didn't exist. Then a day after his death is when they released this new 5 years worth of logs showing where he went, but they redacted or, you know, withheld the information about the doors that he accessed when he was going to buildings and over 700 doors over the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been working, one, to ask JSO why that information is redacted when they have previously disclosed similar information about Sheriff Williams last summer when they did disclose the doors he was accessing. So there are still a lot of questions about where he was going. Some of them were redacted under a provision that protects schematics, building schematics. Others were protected under a provision that protects surveillance. So we know that he had access to some investigative areas or areas that had surveillance equipment. And we also recently learned that he had 5 different passes to access JSO over the past decade, starting with Congressman, then Sheriff, current Congressman John Rutherford in 2013. Over that time, he was granted 5 different badges.
And I have to say that surprised me. I had assumed improperly that this was all going on under the tenure of former Sheriff Mike Williams. But you discovered that no, former Sheriff Rutherford, who's now in Congress, was allowing Kent Sturman to go in and out of the cop shop at will.
We also hadn't realized that that was something we'd been waiting to hear back from JSO on, was the length of access that he had had. And it did go back to Congressman Rutherford, who gave him the first badge, and then Williams gave him another badge. And what we're still working to clarify is what levels of access these 5 different badges had. According to the records they gave us, only the last badge was deactivated and the others weren't marked as deactivated. JSO has since said that they believe they were destroyed or they're deactivated, even though it wasn't marked in the records when he was granted a new badge. But it's not clear what each of these different badges was giving him access to.
Shelton Hull, with the election of new Sheriff T.K. Waters, Kent Sturman's longstanding access to the police department was stopped. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he was being investigated by the police. In the midst of all this, he tragically took his own life. And so we're looking at this story really in the rearview mirror. But at the same time, it does shine a light on the inner workings of our police department.
Yeah, it's very, it's kind of sloppy. I mean, JSO has consistently lied, redacted. You know, it's always a different story. Thanks to Claire and the folks at JAX Today for providing all this information that was never supposed to come out. If you look back over these access points and all that, the question is, well, was there which people were there at the time that he was in the building, especially late at night? These areas where if they're going to put this stuff out and redact the document, why not just destroy it? Why not just say we got hacked and we don't have the information anymore? I have no idea what happened. If I had to bet my pinky finger on it, I would assume that he got flipped by the feds. He got caught doing something, and they agreed to turn state's evidence in exchange for testimony. And then he got a visit from Frank Pentangeli, and things go as they go. At the end of the day, it's a tragic thing, no matter what Kent Sturman was up to. It's sad that he's passed away. You never want to see that happen to anyone. Frankly, given how aggressively he was going in and out of there and donating to all these people, he might have made a great sheriff himself someday, but we'll never know.
You know, this is thing.
Humor doesn't always translate over the airwaves.
I'm not joking.
I can say something serious while we're on the subject, though. I mean, I do want to say something serious. I mean, you know, Kent Sturman told me that, Pat Ivey was going to get the appointment. He told me that.
To be the sheriff.
Yeah, there was a push to get T.K. Waters the interim appointment before that obviously fell through. He's obviously Ron DeSantis' right-hand man in the region, a bundler, a key fundraiser, so on. And Kent was very reliable in terms of political information that was coming out of the JSO, almost as if he had the inside track. He was not particularly a fan of Leanna Cumber, for what it's worth. So if you're, trying to read DeSantis World tea leaves through that, you could look at that. But the Sturman issues may be one of the reasons that DeSantis hasn't weighed in favor of Davis, who did appear on stage with DeSantis at a press conference last year. Mm. I think they were complaining about gas prices and Joe Biden.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it was well known in the political world. If you're running, first of all, I've never known Kent Sturman to support any woman. Let's start there. And secondly, it was well known that you had to kiss his ring to get to DeSantis, period. I think it's incredibly inappropriate that he had access. I think it's interesting that he was in a parking lot at the post office. I think the reason why we're getting some information this is my conspiracy theory, and not no information is because they don't know who he might have sent information to at the post office before he
when he was discovered dead.
Tragically took his life.
Yeah. Interesting. No, yeah, that's an interesting insight. Thank you for that. All right. So we could go on all day about local political intrigue, but folks, it's probably the only story that does unite us all in this time we live in. Yes, it's happy playoff eve, everybody. The town will be rocking once again this weekend as the Jaguars head to Kansas City in their playoff matchup against the Chiefs. This is an away game. It will air on NBC tomorrow starting at 4:30 p.m. They pulled off a miracle win, of course, in their wild card playoff round. Can they do it again against the AFC's top seed? It was incredible when they rallied from 27 points down to shock the Los Angeles Chargers 31-30 in front of an exhilarated, deliriously happy home crowd. And who can forget the spectacle of the man of the hour, Trevor Lawrence, celebrating the win by going to, yes, Waffle House. The best earned media I think any corporation has gotten in modern history. So, you know, all eyes are on the Jaguars Saturday with so much bad news we've been through over the last few years. I think people in Jacksonville have rallied around this because they just so need something exciting and positive to unite around. A.G. Gankarski, you know, it's a nice thing to see, especially after the team has had such tough times for years now, and then enduring the Urban Meyer era of misrule as well.
Yeah, and it's been a convergence of things. I mean, they actually spent aggressively in the offseason with free agents. The free agents have largely panned out, specifically to wide receivers and the tight end. You know, they came out of a weak division. You know, that can't be overstated. I mean, the AFC South this year was horrible. And, you know, Doug Peterson really connects with the players. I mean, you see the clips, you see, you know, all of the social media and all that. And unlike previous coaches, like, say, Tom Coughlin, you know, Peterson, he exhorts these players, he connects with them. You know, they're all like Gen Z or whatever. And, you know, he's got that Gen X, you know, tough but fair dad thing.
Go Gen X.
He's always got the right thing to say. And what I'm looking for in this game, you've got two very creative offensive minds. Doug Peterson and Andy Reid on the other side. They're going to bring out special surprises for each other. You're going to see some plays you've never seen before. I'm predicting a wishbone formation at some point, maybe an I formation, maybe a wedge. I mean, just go back to your Newt Rockne playbook. They're going to pull this stuff out because that field is going to be nasty in Kansas City. So I don't know if the Jaguars have what it takes to knock off the Chiefs, but I do know it's going to be, they're going to give it the best shot they can. And Doug Peterson is going to try to match his former mentor, Andy Reid.
And no shortage of rallies and parties all around town Saturday, Claire. You've got on your Feel the Teal shirt, I see here. People can see it on
our
got your Jaguar shirt on.
I have not been to a game yet, though.
Oh.
I know, I need to go.
Yeah, well,
you're not flying to Kansas City?
I'm not flying to Kansas City, but when they're back in town, when they win, we'll
That's
say.
Right. By the way, they are going to play again in London next season, we're told, at Wembley Stadium. Shelton, you've got on our honorary Jaguars turnover chain, and you're looking good.
That's right. Shout out to King Simba for inventing the Jaguar chain concept. I think it's really interesting, you know. As soon as I started making jokes about Sturman, I just end up with a big chain around my neck. It's very appropriate.
Oh, no.
Having predicted the Jaguar overtime win a couple of weeks ago, I'll tell you, we've made jokes about them for years, but it's been a really successful season. They've done great, and it's exciting to see how happy everyone is about it. Being downtown during these games, everyone's in such a great mood. And with this game coming up, I don't know if the Jaguars will win, but I think they're worth betting on. Now, the playoffs, it's all about chaos. The Jaguars, the Cardiac Cats, they're agents of chaos, and I can see them I can see them thriving. I could see them potentially running the table. And we know that Kansas City is taking it seriously because no one from the Mahomes family has said anything stupid on Twitter this week, which is a refreshing change.
They've even called themselves cockroaches. You can't get rid of them. Randy DeFore.
Well, I think that's one time I'll be glad to be called a cockroach. But, you know, I think the investment that has been put into this team, it really is showing. Mm-hmm. And it couldn't happen at a better time, right, from a business perspective when they got a stadium on the coming up. That's a smart business plan, if you ask me. And I'm just thrilled. It's good for Jacksonville.
It is. And so, again, folks, the playoff game kicks off on NBC tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. And you know what? We had such good discussion that we don't have time, I don't think, for a lightning round. But I want to thank all four of you. City Council Member Randy DeFore, A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics and Jax Today, Claire Heddles of Jax Today, and Shelton Hall of Folia Weekly. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Melissa. At the over.
And finally, RIP to the late, great David Crosby. He was 81. May his memory be a blessing.
Just a song before I go, to whom it may concern. Traveling twice the speed of sound, it's easy to get burned. When the shows were over, we had to get back home. And when we opened up the door, stands before my eyes, driving me to the airport and to the friendly skies, going through security. I held her for so long. She finally looked at me in love, and she was gone.
On the next Fresh Air, the duo Rachel and Phil Reed. They recently appeared on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Their original songs are inspired by swing tunes of the 30s and 40s, and their new album, I Love a Love Song, features them with a jazz ensemble. Join us.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9. But I
can see. President Biden visits devastated parts of Central California. In Washington, Speaker McCarthy comes under fire for his first round of committee assignments. And both parties are warned not to play games with the debt ceiling.
We should never question the creditworthiness of the United States government. I don't care who blames who. Even questioning is the wrong thing to do.
More on the roundup next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Our JME team at the Jacksonville Music Experience covers all the latest music news from artists far and wide, including those making beautiful noise right here in the 904. We add in all the best cuts from national, international, and local artists to regular rotation on The Independent. That's 89.9 HD4, WJCT's new music discovery station. Our editor, Matt Shaw, is here now as we take a listen to three new and local songs that have been reviewed at jacksmusic.org, and they are on rotation at 89.9 HD4. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
All right. So what are we listening to for January?
Yeah, new year. Lots of new music being written about on jacksmusic.org and in rotation on The Independent. So first, though, I want to time travel to the year 2022. Back to December and listen to a song by Erica Reese, a local singer-songwriter and guitarist. To ring in the holidays, Reese dropped a song for everyone who struggles with their emotions, temperament, and mental health during that time of year. Certainly something that seems like our culture is more prepared to talk about these days, so that's nice. The song is called Holidays with a Z-E. Has a really nice indie pop production, compliments of another local artist called Juan. It's a really nice song with some universal themes. Here's a taste of Holidays by Erica Reese. Thank you.
Lana Del Rey, but you said that in your script. My daughter, my youngest, is a huge Lana Del Rey fan. She's going through that Lana Del Rey phase big time.
Who hasn't?
Yeah, she's that sounds like Lana Del Rey a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Turn her on to Erica Reese, please.
Erica Reese, that's Jacksonville's indie dream queen, and it's Holidays by Erica Reese.
Yeah, next up, Corey Kilgannon is a singer-songwriter from the Beaches area who's actually been around for some years and built up what I would consider one of the more significant national followings of anyone locally doing this kind of like earnest indie folk thing that he does. Tens of millions of plays on Spotify to date. But Kilgannon recently switched gears on a new record in collaboration with a multi-instrumentalist with local ties called Jacob Cummings. He's mixing some biting and playful social commentary with more sonic experimentation along with his excellent voice. I want to play a song from the new record. It's called Rooster Crow. I'd recommend listening to the full version when you get a chance because it really builds a ton of nice layers. Here's a taste, though, of Rooster Crow by Corey Kilgannon.
Past my window, she mistook my hate for sacrifice.
That's amazing. And so tens of millions of plays. Is he getting any money though?
that's a good question.
In this streaming era.
Yeah, yeah. Streaming you know, it's very top heavy. We've written about this quite a bit on jacksmusic.org.
Right.
And you know, if you're Beyonce or Kendrick Lamar, and you have billions of plays on Spotify, you know, you're making a good living, but not so much a local artist. So that's why we always say go see a show, buy a ticket, buy vinyl, you know, purchase people's music, because it's one thing to stream it, but a better way to support is to actually put your money up.
Yeah. So do that. It's Rooster Crow by Beaches-based singer-songwriter Corey Kilgannon. Last but not least.
Yeah. So Taylor Olin, St. Augustine artist who makes music under her garage rock alter ego, Dust Fuss. I've seen Dust Fuss perform several times over the last few years and been waiting patiently for her to release some of the great songs I heard live. Sneaky One. This is the first single from a full length called Motor Sigh. It's just a fun, rough edged garage rock tune that I think, you know, we all need music like this in our lives. Don't take things too seriously. Let your hair down. Move your hips if you feel like you want to do that. There's always a time and place for that. So here's Sneaky One by Dust Fuss.
That's fun, too. Now, all of these are reviewed at jacksmusic.org. And as we mentioned, you put local artists in regular rotation at 89.9 HD4, The Independent. People can listen anytime.
That's right. Yeah, along with all the new music from national and international artists, we're adding local stuff to the rotation every week. We also, on jacksmusic.org, it's not all new music and not all, you know, emerging artists. You know, we've got a story about David Crosby up from NPR Music, and David Luckin's actually going to play some David Crosby songs on Anthology. That's 89.9 HD3, mm-hmm. Starting this afternoon and through the weekend as well. So lots of ways to listen, lots of music going on.
And for people who aren't familiar with our HD channels, let's explain all the ways they can access them, because I get asked that a lot. How can I listen to these
totally.
HD channels?
Yeah, you and I both get asked that a lot, but if your car basically is past 2012, built past 2012, you should have access to HD radio. Not all cars do. But the best way, in my opinion, to stream is to go to jacksmusic.org. There's an embedded player there. It shows you all the songs that have played. You can save your favorite songs. You can make your own playlist out of that stuff. And it's just a good way to like dig in deeper to especially the new music we're playing.
Check it out at jacksmusic.org and at 89.9 HD for The Independent. Our own Matt Shaw, thanks as always for bringing us the music.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening, everyone. Go Jaguars. We'll be back today at noon for the Florida Roundup. Here's a little bit more of Dust Fuss.
Must be because I had the flu for Christmas. And I'm not feeling up too bar. It increases my paranoia. Like looking at my mirror and seeing a police car. But I'm not giving in an inch to fear. Yes, I promised myself this year I feel like I owe it.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.